Route 616, your home for all fiends Marvel main continuity. Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 68 of Route 616. I am back with the regular lineup. The usual suspects, as one might say.
Call a doctor, because it's going to get strange.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, Bill, really?
Dan's right there, and you're doing the work.
And we're unscripted people. Okay.
Let me just get rid of that script. I don't have any paper lying here that I can tear up. I don't want to tear up my wrestling notes that I still need.
But can we start before we go anywhere? Can we start with Godzilla Minus One?
If you want to, I have no comments on it.
I have no spoilers. I'm not going to give spoilers.
Godzilla destroys Tokyo. There you go. Spoiler.
Damn it, you've seen it. I'm assuming neither of you have seen it because it hasn't been released here yet. But, oh my God. Wow. Now, I've been a huge Godzilla fan since I was a little kid. I watched the very first Godzilla movie when I was like 8 or 9 years old. I remember my sister took me to the theater to see it. And I think it was Godzilla and Mothra or something like that. And I thought it was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen. Now, I was only 8 years old. Back then, special effects were men in rubber suits, stuff like that. You know, this was back in the early 60s.
And back then, they carved the images into stone tablets and flipped them really fast.
Yeah, kind of pushed them really fast past you. Right. But it was, you're not going to get me with that one, buddy. Nice try, though. But I loved the Godzilla, the kaiju movies, like that Japanese subgenre. I've loved it.
Oh, they are so good.
And I mean,
even the old cheesy effects somehow work in them.
Oh, they do. And, you know, to sort of an 8 year old's eyes, it's very real, you know, and it's fascinating. And it was scary and it was fun and it was silly. And as the years went by, Godzilla really became more and more aimed at a younger audience with Jet Jaguar, you know, Baby Godzilla, and, you know, all this stuff, right? It really wasn't meant for a mature audience. It was more just a silly, fun thing, right? It wasn't, I think.
But then they'd periodically break out these, like, really mature Godzillas in the series.
They would occasionally, yeah. But, you know, Mechagodzilla, stuff like that, it was really just for fun. And, you know, but I think probably the only one I saw that I never really liked was the first Godzilla versus King Kong. It was just really bad. But when Hollywood got a hold of it back in the late 90s and decided they were going to do it, it was such a disaster.
That was good for people who had never seen Godzilla and just enjoyed a kaiju movie.
I guess. I hate it.
I know plenty of... Yeah, but you had seen Godzilla. I know plenty of people that was their first exposure to Godzilla and they loved it.
Okay.
And then they saw actual Godzilla, and they're like, no, actually, that's terrible. But it was just like, big monsters stomping through a city is cool.
Yeah, but it was Iguanazilla.
Oh, yeah, it's not Godzilla.
No,
it
wasn't. But, I mean, when they did try and reboot it yet again, they didn't do bad. Like, you know, the special effects were definitely far better, like, and everything, but
Reboots had some good moments in them.
They did, but King of the Monsters.
I really enjoyed the paradrop
sequence.
That was one of the coolest things I'd seen in the Godzilla movie.
Yeah, the King of the Monsters bit was the King of the Monsters one was good, but not great.
Yeah, none of them were as good as the actual Japanese ones, but
yeah, and then
they
Shin
had
Godzilla,
their moments.
Yeah, Shin Godzilla came out. We felt like they were really starting to. You know, the Japanese were trying to sort of get their property back and make a decent film. And then Godzilla Minus One showed up. And for a Godzilla fan, a long time Godzilla fan, this is literally the movie that we've been waiting for since we first discovered Godzilla existed.
Nice. I'm going to have to watch it.
This is the movie that we've been wanting as adults. We got the one we wanted as children. Now they've given us finally an adult Godzilla movie, and it is leaps and bounds better than any other Godzilla movie, first of all. but it's leaps and bounds better than just about anything Hollywood's put out in the last decade. Right. It's incredible. Like, everything about it, you can tell they took the time to work on the story. You can tell they understood the property they were working with. They didn't just grab a random, you know, first-time director and throw them into the Marvel Universe and say, here, direct this blockbuster.
Yeah.
This was somebody who knew the property, understood the impact it would have on an audience if they did it right. And they went and they did it right. I can't praise it enough. It's definitely the best movie I've seen in a decade.
I'm glad to hear that, because I've heard mixed reviews of it so far. I've heard some people say it's really, really good, but I've also heard some people say that it's, like, terrible.
Oh, it's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing.
I suspect the people who didn't like it don't like kaiju movies.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's not for the TikTok generation. This is the story in this, the characters, everything is, dare I say it this way, is actually serious. You know, he comes, Godzilla's one big badass motherfucker. He's nasty. This is not the Godzilla that has a boxing match with fucking King Kong. Okay,
this is your mama's Godzilla.
he's not your mama's Godzilla. But no, this is Godzilla, you know, as the antagonist. He's no longer a protagonist. They've gotten away from that. They've stepped completely away from anything like that. This is Godzilla being exactly what he was meant to be from the very beginning. The antagonist. He's big, he's bad, and he's mad. And he's going to kill anyone and anything that gets in his way.
I'm definitely... He's big, he's green, and he's jacked.
That's what I was going
for. I'm definitely going to have to go to that when it hits theaters.
Hey, size does matter.
I was going to say I would laugh if Bill watches this and we come back in a few weeks and Bill's like, it was fine.
Oh, no. You know what? I have every faith in
this. Having heard Dan's review, I expect I'm going to love it. We disagree on some movies.
We do.
But I don't think we disagree on Godzilla.
No, this is the Godzilla movie I have wanted since I was a kid. This is everything that all that Hollywood crap hasn't been. And, you know, no disrespect to the actors that worked on it or the people that did these Hollywood versions. They just kept missing the point. And this guy is so on point with this film. When we got the original Godzilla and they kind of inserted Raymond Burr in it, there were moments in that Godzilla film that really touched on Japan as it was in that era. And anybody with any shred of understanding of post-World War II history would understand what Godzilla was and what he signified and what this was really all about.
Yeah.
And this movie is spot on point.
He's that for a Western audience.
Yeah. This talks about post-war Japan and what caused Godzilla to exist and what happens and what the people have to deal with and go through.
Yeah, because right.
Trying to survive.
That was the problem with the good Hollywood movies, not the 1999 one.
Yeah, they just didn't.
The problem with the good Hollywood movies was they couldn't commit to the bit. Like, they started with Godzilla as the antagonist, but they always had to have another kaiju come along and Godzilla fight it, and then Godzilla end up being a misunderstood monster. And people kind of liking Godzilla, despite the fact that he rampaged around, destroyed their city.
He destroyed the city, killed hundreds of thousands of people. And then he swims off into the sunset, and everybody, my God, yeah,
it's the T-Rex from Jurassic Park effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had to make it a good guy in the end. Whereas if you keep Godzilla as the antagonist, even if he kills another kaiju, he's still a giant rampaging lizard with no morality or purpose. He's just a huge creature, and we're ants to him.
Yep, and trust me, Bill, this is the Godzilla movie that needed to be made for 60, 70 years. This is the movie that I've been waiting for.
Well, I'm going to it.
I'm so glad somebody's finally made it.
Before I was probably going to wait and buy it on YouTube. Now I'm going to it.
I unfortunately did not get to see it in theaters, but when it comes into the theaters, I am going because I cannot wait to see this on the big screen. Holy crap.
Oh, finally going to see a good Godzilla movie in theaters because I've only ever seen one Godzilla movie in theaters.
Oh.
Please say it was 99.
Of course it was 99.
Yeah, I saw that in theaters. And actually, in the 99 version, you can almost see Godzilla. There's about four scenes where you almost see him. Right?
I don't know. Yeah. Some of those scenes are pretty dark still.
Yeah, well, they're really dark, but he is there in that image. Like, yes. For 3 or 4 seconds, you actually get to see
him. Like watching Aliens versus Predator.
Yes, exactly.
The second one. Pretty much. The second
one. It's so dark that you can't see Godzilla for most of it.
Yeah. What you usually get is a foot or a nose or a finger or a tail, right? You don't really get to see him hardly ever in the film.
If you've seen the music video that was huge about the time that came out with the song from the soundtrack by the rapper that I don't remember, you see more Godzilla in that music video than you see in the actual movie.
Old film, yeah. It's true.
I watched a review on the movie one time. I know. I've heard how bad it is.
He was bad enough that he was killed in 3 seconds by Godzilla, which unfortunately makes him canon. Right.
Yeah.
Zilla is canon. But, it's not Godzilla, and it was killed in 3 seconds in Shin Godzilla.
Yeah. Oh, God. But so that's my piece for films. Go see this friggin' movie. Everybody, anybody listen to this, you will not regret it. Whether you like monster movies or not, you're still going to enjoy this movie regardless.
This podcast is not brought to you by Godzilla Minus One. Dan just thinks it's a great movie.
Yeah, no, it hasn't been brought by anybody. I mean, just think you need to see
what do you expect? It's about a prehistoric creature rampaging through modern society. Dan relates.
It takes Dan back.
I do. Ah, the good old days.
He's been waiting for a time period piece that he could get into.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, shit. Well, I guess let's get into the comics since the whole point was we were getting this out of the way today. It's all Doctor Strange all the time today. We're going to go through Strange Tales issues 132 through 137, I think it is.
Yeah, it's 137.
And we are going to have some fun, hopefully. So I will start us off with issue 132, B-Story. This one is titled Face to Face at Last with Baron Mordo. We have Stanley... Yeah, Stanley and Steve Ditko together here. The cover was done by Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito. This was a February 1965 release date. I don't have a letter for this, but oh well. This is a 10-page story, and I will take this one away.
Letterer, I believe, was Artie, but give me a second here. You start doing the review, and I'll look it up while you're doing that, because I have to page through the Torch story.
Okay. This is a pretty quick synopsis, so I might get done it before you find out. Returning to New York, Dr. Strange finds that his sanctum is occupied by one of Mordo's minions, disguising himself as another minion of Mordo.
He's disguised himself as one of Mordo's minions
to get back in the sanctum is what's going on. Dr. Strange gets the drop on his opponent. When he tries to access the Orb of Agamotto, which it isn't actually named yet, but that's what it is, he is shocked to find that it is no longer in its cradle. Detecting Strange's presence, Dormammu infuses Mordo with his mystical might and sends him to battle Strange. While at the lair of the Ancient One, the weakened Ancient One tells his servant that perhaps only eternity may save him. Back at Strange's sanctum, Dormammu takes full control over Mordo and pours all his mystical power into him, allowing him to easily defeat Doctor Strange, making Strange black during what?
Friends in foreign lands.
Easily defeat Doctor Strange, making Strange black during combat. I feel like there's what's going on.
Black
there?
Out during combat is probably
black
what
out.
Going
there's for. A word missing. Okay, I was like, what? Black out during combat. I was like, yeah, I don't remember Doctor Strange suddenly becoming black.
They didn't do blackface in this one, no.
Okay. So that was the end of that synopsis. So this is important in this story arc because it's the first time we're told the name Eternity. And this sends Doctor Strange on a quest to find out what the fuck and who the fuck Eternity is.
And this was lettered by Artie. I was right.
Oh, perfect.
I mean, it's a 50-50 shot right now. They only have two letterers.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was fine. I gave it 3 stars. Not really much remarkable happened here.
I actually really enjoyed this one and gave it 4.
It's a comic that exists.
I didn't mind the concept, but he's fought Mordo so much.
I know, but it feels a little refreshed to you with the idea of Dormammu thrown in. Dormammu really carries this arc a lot.
He does. I mean, if this was just...
If it was just Mordo, I would not like this.
If this was Mordo, this arc would be sitting comfortably in 2 territory all the time.
Yeah, so much of it, you're bored of Mordo?
Yes.
One could say that, in fact.
Yeah. Yo mama, whatever.
But, yeah, I don't really have any particularly standout moments in this arc or anything, or in this comic or anything to call out. It's very much just segments of a larger story, much more than other arcs, which are little standalone stories that have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then just tie together.
I just really like how the big three are like written. I think they're written very logically in this arc, and I just find it's pretty easy and fun read.
Oh yeah, I'm not meaning anything bad about that. It's just like even the Hulk arc. Every issue was like a little Hulk story where he'd go and fight something, pretty much.
Oh yeah, it's just it's segments of one big thing. Yeah,
whereas this issue we read just now was very much a transitional issue. He got to the Sanctum and he fought with Mordo and he was losing.
Yeah.
And that's all really happened. Like, there's not really a moment to call out and be like, yeah, this was really good. It's just part of a larger story that works pretty well as a whole.
True. Yeah. This is the highest rated overall one so far, so.
Yeah. I mean, it is good. I couldn't go higher than 3 because he's fighting Mordo again, and there's not even, like, a conclusion.
Yeah, that's fair. Now we can go from the highest rated one so far to the lowest rated one so far. As we go into issue 133, B-Story, which is titled A Nameless Land, A Timeless Time. Yes,
a pointless story.
Quite possibly.
You're not terribly wrong there, Dan.
It's on the territory. We've got Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, of course. We've got Jack Kirby making us proceed to doing the cover once more. Sam Rosen does letters, supposedly, on this one. March 1965 release date, 10-page story. And I will also take this one. Alrighty. As soon as there it is. Transported to the Dark Dimension, Doctor Strange is reunited with Clea. However, they are attacked and made a prisoner of Shasana. Oh, yeah. A sorceress who desires to rule the Dark Dimension herself.
This Probing is not the right story.
It's not? Yeah, it is. It says I'm on the right one.
It's not the right story.
What the fuck?
This is the one where he dimensions jumps to get away.
That's what I fought by the title. I guess I'll have
to... And then he meets that woman. And her sister is, like, the dictator of the dimension.
Yeah, that's what this is. That's Shasana.
Yeah, but it's... Okay, so what's throwing me is it's not the Dark Dimension. The other woman is not Clea.
Reunited with Clea. Okay. So they messed up part of this, then.
Yeah, that's what threw me, because he doesn't meet Clea until way later.
Yeah,
they
don't reunite till way later. So the one that...
Because she hasn't even gotten captured by Dormammu yet for setting the Nameless Ones out.
Yeah, and he doesn't know about her at all. It does say Clea's in this issue, but I don't think that's where she is.
She's in this issue because she's watching what Dormammu's doing in the Dark Dimension.
Yeah, I think that's the one
But she's not the woman that he meets in this story.
Nasaka is the actual character.
I didn't know she even had a name. I don't think they give her a name in this story.
They don't give her a name in the story. That's just her name she was given later on.
It's probably from a handbook that I didn't look up.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so he is... Doctor Strange meets who is Nasaka, but she's unnamed in the story. and however they made a prisoner of Shasana, who is the sorceress, who the size of the real dark dimension herself, that is the it's the sister of the one that Doctor Strange has met up with.
Yeah, and it's not the dark dimension. Not calling you out on this, but just for clarity for people, it's another random dimension. The woman that wants to rule the dark dimension is Umar.
Yes. So they have this synopsis completely fucked up. Because when this starts, Doctor Strange is sent through all these different dimensions, then lands in this
And the person just who wrote this just assumed that it was the dark dimension, so therefore Nisaka must be Clea.
Yeah. Okay, we cleared that up. Probing the mind of a lesser creature under Shasana's dominion, Doctor Strange learns the source of her power comes from a powerful orb. Do they mention where that orb's hidden? No, the orb is hidden under his throne, so I'll throw that out there too.
I don't think he knew that yet.
Attacking...
Oh wait, no, he did figure that out from the creature.
Attacking Shasana once... Well, it doesn't mention it anyway, so I figured I'd throw that in.
Yeah, no, that is important. I was wondering if it was later in the synopsis, but no, he did get it there.
This synopsis is actually dog shit.
Well, yeah, they don't even know who half the characters are.
Attacking Shasana once more, Doctor Strange blocks the orb from providing her with power and jumps upon it to destroy it, causing a mystical backlash that sends Doctor Strange through the myriad dimensions. So, yeah. I mean, it's a little self-contained story. I liked it, but it's unnecessary.
Yeah, this is completely unnecessary, but I thought it was decently fun. I gave it 3.
I gave it 3. It was actually surprisingly fun. It's just, you could easily skip this issue with no...
Yeah. I think this probably exists because Stan was getting antsy that Doctor Strange didn't seem to be scoring any victories.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Because there's another one, spoiler, coming up in the ones I cover today, where he has another little adventure in another dimension and fights some random throwaway bad guy.
It happens multiple times throughout this whole big arc where he kind of gets sidetracked for a couple issues.
Yeah, and it feels like it's just Stan wanting to actually give people a victory because he feels like if they don't get Doctor Strange winning, they'll stop reading the story.
Which is low-key probably what was upsetting Steve because he couldn't just tell his big story he wanted to tell.
Although, I gotta say, I think given the time period, Stan probably had a point because people weren't used to comics without conclusions.
Yeah, and
people would have felt like nothing was happening.
Stan's not really fully in the realm here, to be fair, if that was his point, because, I mean, these, like we just said, it's not like they was bad.
Nah. Well, okay, the next one is, but I still think it's just that, like, people really weren't used to comics that would go on for a year and not end the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well. Okay. Let's move on to issue 134 B story. This one is titled Earth Be My Battleground. Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, Frank Giacola on the cover. Artie Simic lettering. April 1965 release date, 10-page story. And Dan will have the pleasure of taking us into the mystical world of Doctor Strange.
Well, okay. Dan will read the synopsis. Pleasure-wise, don't count on it, people. Okay, Earth Be My Battleground. Being shunted back to Earth's dimension following his battle with Shazana, Doctor Strange once more becomes a target of Baron Mordo, who is still benefiting from an entire army of followers and having his mystical might bolstered by Yomama's powers. However, in the dark dimension, Clea helps Doctor Strange gain the upper hand by unleashing the Mindless Ones. Us, I think, isn't it? The three of us. In order to keep Yomama
busy.
Definitely
the ones that don't like Spider-Man.
Oh, well. Somebody from the gallery decided to speak up. How is it up there in the nosebleeds, buddy? In order to keep Yomama busy long enough for Strange... for Strange...
Get fucked, he's better than your teams.
Oh.
And that's not me talking. That's the Premier League.
No.
You know the people that think Ted Uncle is a good ref.
You see what I mean now, Ryan, about Manchester fans? one good fucking game and they're suddenly they're going to win the league. Blah, 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 blah. Don't know why everybody's picking on Ten Hag. He's the best manager ever. He's like, yeah, like a week ago you wanted him fired. Or have you? Oh, yeah, you did forget, didn't you? Anyway.
Don't you know by now? Don't listen to Manchester fans about anything.
Yeah, well, we figured that out a long time ago.
I've had to largely stay off the Manchester subreddits because there's so many idiotic takes.
Oh, I know. Okay, let me finish. Speaking of idiotic takes, let me finish this one before we go too far. Okay, so Strange is gaining the upper hand by unleashing the mindless ones in order to keep Dormammu busy long enough for Strange to bind Mordo and his minions in molecules.
Molecules.
Don't worry, Stan doesn't know either.
Just make it up.
Sure. With Mordo defeated, Doctor Strange returns to the Ancient One and probes his master. Oh, kinky. Oh, his master's mind. To learn that the one entity that may be able to save him is known as Eternity. Well, this could take a while, then. Meanwhile, having restored order to the Dark Dimension, Dormammu begins to wonder who caused the Mindless Ones to get out.
I mean, if there's one thing we learned from the aliens, the best route to the mind is through the butt.
Yeah, but I don't think it's fair to call Star Wars fans Mindless Ones, to be honest. I mean, you know, it's just cruel.
An awful lot of them hate Andor, so...
Wow, that was a backhand shot. It really was. That was very backhanded. I'm impressed.
Still have the loaded glove for that one.
Yeah. So anybody
just let me shake the international object down.
Yeah. So there you go. That's it for that one.
I like that one.
Yeah, this was another completely fine issue.
A 3 for me.
3 for me as well. We're actually making some progress with the defeat of Mordo, although unfortunately they don't stick with it. It was probably time to just write Mordo out of the story here, but they keep him going.
They sure do. As we move on. Yes, we shall. As we move on to issue 135 B-Story, Eternity Beckons. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, Frank Giacola on the cover, Sam Rosen on letters, May 1965 release date, 10-page story, and Dan will also take this one.
Okay, and just for the record, this cover is even worse than the last one. Wow. So, Eternity Beckons. Seeking information that could help him locate the entity known as Eternity, Doctor Strange travels to London, dealing with any of Mordo's minions sent to deal with him. That's good of him. While in the Dark Dimension, Dormammu learns that it was Clea who had released the Mindless Ones during his previous attack on Doctor Strange. Visiting a mystic named Sir Baskerville, really?
Yeah. And really? Yes, they are deliberately referencing that, even though they don't go into any depth with it.
Oh, God. Okay, visiting a mystic named Sir Baskerville, Baskerville tells Strange that he has knowledge of Eternity in some scrolls. Ooh, cool. However, Baskerville is really an agent of Baron Mordo and alerts his master. I know, I'm shocked.
What a shock. With a name of a guy who notoriously was actually behind the goings-on.
Yeah. Mordo sends out one of his minions to do his bidding. Ooh, that's what minions are for. I wasn't sure. Channeling
I thought
his
they
mystical...
were populating the Facebook posts of boomers.
Yeah, they are. That too. But they're doing it, they're doing Mordo's bidding, apparently. Channeling
somebody has to do something for him, right?
Honest to God. Channeling his mystical powers through him. However, Strange easily defeats Mordo's minion, knocks out Baskerville, and fights off more of Mordo's astral minions before departing the castle. God, what do you guys like about this? Mordo arrives shortly after to find that his opponent has escaped. And that's it for that one.
It's better than it sounds. I gave this one a 3.
It would have to be.
This one is a low 3. It's starting to drag. The Baskerville story was another standalone little story they were telling, probably to appease Stan. And it wasn't interesting.
No, it just passes for a fine story.
They're just threading the water. I still gave it a 3, but they're just threading water here.
We're entering this few issue stretch here where it's pretty off task from the main task.
I suspect this is probably when Stan and Steve stopped talking as much, and so they were just kind of trying to hold position until they figured out where they were going with things.
It's just. Yeah, okay. I kind of hoped for more from Dr. Strange. I really did.
Steve Ditko is... He's nutty, but his nuttiness makes sense in a way. So he gets away with a lot.
Grounded, too, because, like, Spider-Man's one of the more grounded stories they do.
Kool-Aid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it tastes yummy, Dan.
No, seriously, that's what they said about Jim Jones. Then he started handing out free Kool-Aid.
I like grape flavor. Anything.
We've got some Kool-Aid for you then. You can drink it while you're watching your Rob Zombie movies.
Oh, perfect.
We'll even have people with guns stationed around the room to make sure you do. The Jim Jones right. way.
That's right.
A good juice and one of my favorites.
No concept of what the reference is.
Yeah, do I know what the Jonestown Massacre is?
Oh, okay. Wow. I am genuinely impressed.
I'm just not selling it.
Okay, go ahead. It's Bill's turn. Do your worst, Bill.
Well, I'm really doing Stan's worst, but I have to wait for Ryan to set it up.
Set it up, Ryan.
136B story. What lurks beneath the mask? Do we want to know? Stan Lee, Steve Ditko.
Boredom.
Jack Kirby, John Severin on the cover, Artie Simic on letters, June 1965 release date, 10-page story, and Bill can start this two-parter off.
To be fair, the consensus on the site is much higher on this story than I am.
I'm higher than you on the story, too, to be fair.
Yeah. Dormammu captures Clea and takes her prisoner for her involvement in the release of the Mindless Ones during one of Dormammu's attempts at destroying Doctor Strange. While in the Earth dimension, Doctor Strange continues to seek out information about Eternity while trying to hide from Mordo and his minions. However, with each mystic he visits, Strange finds dead ends. Visiting the aged Genghis, Doctor Strange is given a scroll that is supposed to bring him to Eternity. However, it is the wrong one, and Strange finds himself in a world filled with masks and being bound to a plague. And a being bound to a plaque. Okay, I missed a word, which makes it make way less sense. Unmasking him, it turns out to be a demon that tricks others into unmasking it so that it can, in turn, steal their bodies and imprison their spirits. To be clear, cool. At this point, cool. The story is still going pretty well.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Although Doctor Strange falls for his trap, he uses his mental control over his cloak of levitation to make his enemy unmask and free him. He just batters the guy around until the guy becomes convinced that he can't beat Doctor Strange and he sets him free. Battling the demon, Doctor Strange easily overpowers him and then sets all his victims free before returning to his own dimension. With all other avenues exhausted, Doctor Strange decides that the only way to learn of Eternity is to probe further into the Ancient One's mind, even at risk of his life.
Tell me or you're going to get probed.
You'll have to wait for the shockering next issue.
Shockering?
This. You know what? That wasn't even the story I was thinking it was. This was the two-parter.
This isn't the two-parter. This is the really stupid... throw away half of a comic because Stan wanted to do an entire issue, or Steve wanted to do an entire issue on the mind probe, and so they threw in the demon to fill like 5 pages, and it derailed what was going along really well, because I liked
the part. Yeah, it has a really strong start.
Yeah, I liked the part of Strange going around and talking to all the mystics, trying to get information on Eternity. But oh my god, is the stuff with the demon badge.
And they threw in the clear thing, too, with this issue.
Yeah, which was also good. Because that made sense. Who else would have set the mindless ones free?
Yeah, I mean...
I would have.
This one still squeaked a 3 out of me, so I like
it. It got a 2 for me, mostly because the demon side was really bad. The fact that he beat him just by, like, buffeting him about with the cloak of levitation annoyed the crap out of me.
It's very MCU.
It is, and it's not good when they do it either. At least then it's usually some random goon, not like the main antagonist of the story.
The main antagonist of a dimension.
Yeah.
I hope they don't want to use him again. Anyway.
Yeah.
I hope they never use him again.
I'm curious now. I gotta know. Please be a one-off. No, he does return.
Oh god, when do they bring him back? I gotta check this.
You've read it.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I remember it. I've read it's like
Champions number
10,000 columns.
Champions number 2. It's his only other appearance. He might have just been like a throwaway fan too.
He was probably a throwaway reference to Doctor Strange in there. Because, yeah, he's definitely just a reference. Because looking at the synopsis of Champions 2, it's not about him. It's a Pluto story.
Anyways, we shall move on and get ready to probe as we go into the last Doctor Strange issue of the week with issue 137, B story. When meets the Mystic Minds. And we've got Stan Lee, Steve Ditko here, Jack Kirby, John Severin on the cover, Artie Simic on letters, July 1965 release date, 10-page story, and Bill will take us away.
Alright, buckle in for a long and involved synopsis.
Oh, wow.
I'm ready.
Some of that may not be true. Choosing to probe the mind of the Ancient One to learn the secret location of Eternity, Doctor Strange must combat his own master's mystic defenses, barring those who seek to probe his mind. Getting through these defenses after some effort, Doctor Strange is told by his master how to access a doorway to the realm of Eternity. Traveling to a lone peak in the mountains, Doctor Strange mystically accesses the doorway with his Eye of Agamotto and travels through it. Baron Mordo arrives on the location just seconds after the portal disappears. That's it.
Wow. I'm riveted. Riveted. I like the part where he skull-fucked the Ancient One. I mean mind-probed the Ancient One.
I hope you did, because that was 8 of the 10 pages.
It really was. I actually kind of liked it, though. Like, I liked the commitment to it, to be honest. I was
so bored by this one. This was a 2 for me.
I gave this a 3.
I mean, once again, you're way more in line with the site average than I am.
I also read these like all together, too, so it helps if you do that.
I did this the first time, too, but I was trying to judge them as standalone stories. And nothing happens in this story. Nothing happens. It's 8 pages of him sitting cross-legged, staring at the Ancient One while Steve draws magic effects.
Yeah, but I thought it was pretty like logical and shit. Like,
it was logical for 2 pages. It just went on way too long.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously. Obviously, Steve wanted to make it a whole big deal because it's...
Yeah. It needed to...
That's why I was really enjoying it at first, and then I lowered my rating because...
Yeah, it needed to be more...
It was dragging on.
...involved for it to go this long. Like, I'm cool with the concept of him cracking into the Master's mind, taking an entire issue. But the art needs to be more dynamic than just him sitting staring cross-legged at the Ancient One with Steve Ditko magic effects drawn around it. Like, he's not moving, the Master's not moving, it's just colors. And I'm probably losing some of the impact by reading it on Marvel Unlimited, where it's been digitally recolored. But
possibly.
it was very slow.
I mean, that's fair enough. I can see where you would get that. I did think it dragged on. I just had a stronger feeling for it at the start.
And like I said, you're way more in line with the site average. This has higher than a 3 average. Which it has a strong, that it's a good comic. I just didn't like it.
Has a strong cliffhanger, too.
Oh, the cliffhanger is fantastic.
Which isn't fully lived up to, but whatever.
We're early to mid-60s. No cliffhangers are going to pay off properly.
No.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, that was this week's comics, Haldok. Pretty solid lineup, really. Nothing too offensive.
Yeah, even the two I don't like. I don't like them as standalone comics. As part of this bigger arc, they're fine. Like, they didn't make me want to stop reading or so. It was just, they're definitely the weaker part of this.
Oh. My cliffhanger comments might not have been right with this one looking at the next issue, but whatever. Well, yeah, so next week is all Doctor Strange again, because, yeah, we have another week and a half of this. So we have issues 138 through 143 next week to cover. And we have a strong start by the looks of it, so that's cool. Yeah,
really good, really good, really good.
I think this is where we enter the strongest stretch of the arc.
Oh, definitely. Okay, it starts falling apart a bit at the end. 143 isn't great. But everything up to that is pretty good. This is definitely one of the stronger parts of the arc.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. For the mystical magic bullshit of Doug Ditch.
There's relatively little bullshit in that arc. Until we get to the filler at the end.
Will there be more probing? Find it next week.
I don't think we see Clea much, so probably not.
Dan might like this more when there's more Clea.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Clea's an upstanding young lady.
Okay.
That depends on who's writing her.
Oh, shit. Well, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I'm not confusing her with a different... No, it's definitely her that, like, fucked Ben Franklin and then they ran back on it because they got scared of the effects. I'm not going to tell you. You have to read it for yourself, but that is totally a thing that happened.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Dan.
I have nothing to say about this at all.
I think that's just a cue.
It was not subtle at first, and then they changed writing teams between issues, and the next writing team is like, how can we undo this?
Yeah.
Well, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, and whichever you like to. We are available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and, well, Spotify, of course. And if you're on Spotify, click that poll. Let us know why you would let Shoshana rule over you.
I was going to go with the Demon of the Mask, but sure.
Sure.
And signing off, yes, that Ben Franklin.
Shoshana was a one-off character, by the way, if for anybody curious. Anyways, that was this week. We'll see you next week, hopefully. And more Doctor Strange shall be upon us.
Yeah, have a good one, everyone.
See you later, guys.